Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
And this is NPR News. We're live at the Minnesota State Fair. I'm Mike Mulcahy. It's NPR Day. The fair is a great place to hear from politicians and talk about politics, which is why we are so pleased to have the two major party candidates for governor on our stage this hour. Hennepin County Commissioner Jeff Johnson is the Republican candidate, and First District Congressman Tim Walz is the DFL candidate. Now, we don't have a lot of rules for our debate today. We want to give both candidates a fair chance to express and explain their positions. I'll ask some questions. Earlier, I asked listeners to send in questions. We'll hear a number of those. And we hope to take some questions from our state fair audience, especially if you're truly undecided. And we'll see about that. As for the audience, we want you to be involved. We want you to be into it. But we want you to be respectful of both of our candidates, too. Jeff Johnson, Tim Walz, thanks so much for coming today. Thank you.
Thanks for having us. Thanks, everybody.
Now, one of you in a few months will be working on a new two-year state budget. Tell me specifically, if you can, two priorities where the state should be spending more and two areas where the state should be spending less. And Jeff Johnson, let me start with you.
I'm not sure where we should be spending more, because we've seen a 53% increase in state spending the last 8 years, but I can tell you where my spending priorities will be. One will be K-12 education, because that is an area in the Constitution where the state is directed to provide that to our citizens. And another will be public safety, and I'll give you a third.
Okay.
We need and do have probably the strongest safety net in America. And we should be proud of that, and I will continue that, but we need to make sure we're focusing it on our most vulnerable citizens rather than spreading it around further than maybe we can afford it to be.
So is that a place you'll cut spending?
Overall, human services, the welfare budget, yes. And one thing that I've talked about is that we need to start auditing the programs that we fund in this state. We are more generous than any state in the country by far with respect to welfare. We are double the national average per person on welfare spending. We need to measure these programs to figure out which ones are actually working and changing people's lives for the better and which ones are not.
Okay, anywhere else you would cut spending?
There may be other areas that I would certainly consider it, but I would add public safety as another priority, by the way.
Tim Walz, two places you would increase spending and anywhere where you would cut.
Thank you for all being out here today. When we talk about budgeting, a budget is both a fiscal document and is a moral document. It's a reflection of how we view ourselves and the future that we want to see together. With that being said, for this state to be successful and for us to see that bright future that we'll create, because we're not interested in Minnesota about someone else deciding our future. We're not interested in worrying about the future. We're interested in setting that bright future where everyone has an opportunity. The fundamental piece where that starts is investing in our people in education, making sure that every single child, black, white, brown, indigenous, has that opportunity. And as we close that achievement gap, we need to view these things. The opportunity of investment there is the opportunity to have the best qualified workforce in the world that grows the economy. Making that happen, we need to understand children and people don't come in pieces. They need to make sure that we're providing health care so that every single person has the opportunity to live the fullest life they can while contributing to the economy. The questions were specifically on that. I think we certainly need to, and again, I would ask us all to ask these questions as we write a budget together. If you just throw out a number and say, this is a number, and we're going to stick to this, and we're not going to add a penny to it, or we're not going to cut a penny to it, that misses the point of smart budgeting. We need to set the goals in this state, determine the most efficient way to achieve those cost effectively, and then budget fairly to get to those things. And I think what we've seen is, we know our transportation system is severely underfunded. We know that we have a crumbling infrastructure that's going to take the capacity to make sure we invest in it. So I said, I am open to this conversation about the gas tax in Minnesota that is below the average, making sure that money goes back into transportation. areas,
all right,
areas where I think you should be concerned, and I don't know if it's necessarily a cut, but I can guarantee you the buck will definitely stop with me as your governor. We should expect more out of our agencies like MNLARS to be able to deliver on what is asked of the citizens, to make sure we have efficiencies and safeguards in place, to make sure that if we are responsible as a government agency, they're delivering. If not, we retool those.
Jeff Johnson, transportation. Tim Walz brought
it. Well, transportation, you haven't said you'd consider. You said you'd raise the gas tax, and the starting point would be a 35% increase, which I don't think is necessary for Minnesotans who are already terribly overtaxed in this state. But here is, I mean, we have a lot of differences. Tim and I get along great, but we have a lot of differences from a policy standpoint, which I think is good for Minnesota, that we can talk about those things. And here is one very basic one. Tim, I think we're up to about 40 promises that you've made over this campaign to increase spending, many of them by a lot. And to pay for those, we're not talking about a gas tax increase. We are going to have to talk about huge tax increases probably across the board. And I think it is time that we don't just focus in this state on the people who are receiving benefits. We should continue to focus on them. But we should also pay some attention to the people who are paying for those benefits. I think the taxpayers need an ally in government.
Tim Walz, huge tax increases?
Well, no. Well, first of all, you know this is a truism in life. You get what you pay for. In a state, you get what you pay for in investments in people, you get what you pay for in roads. That is not true. I have been honest enough with folks to tell them that we need to take a look at the gas tax. We were in an earlier debate where Jeff told us we had the highest gas tax in the nation, or one of the highest gas taxes in the nation. We do not. We're underneath the federal limit. I understand the gas tax is very regressive. It falls heavily on those folks at the lower end of the economic scale. So we need to look at broader ways to do this. I have not said you need to increase spending, you need to increase across the board. What I've said is I am going to honestly talk with citizens of Minnesota to understand what do we expect to get out of our education system, what do we expect to get out of our transportation system, and let's all be very clear. We can spend on the front end in investing in people, or we can pay on the back end with incarceration, with things that go to the point of not solving.
Right.
So I've made the case, invest smartly in people. You grow an economy which makes sure that we are able to keep our capacity to continue to grow and innovate in Minnesota like it's always been.
Jeff Johnson.
Amen on investing smartly in people. I couldn't agree with you more. And early investment does make a difference on the back end. I've always been a believer in that. But, Tim, you have. We've got the questionnaires. You've made promise after promise after promise to increase spending. Not to consider it, but to increase spending. The Education Minnesota one had like 17 different promises to increase spending, and we could add to that list. So somebody's got to pay for all of those increases, and I think we just have to be honest. We can't make promises we can't keep.
Tim Walz.
Well, that is factually incorrect, but I think before you get this, I get it. I'm a school teacher. I've lived thrifty my entire life. I understand the piece of this, and I understand Minnesotans are willing to pay their fair share, but they want to make sure it's fair and it's going somewhere. But to be very clear, if you're talking to people about cutting their taxes, it's not money straight back into your pocket. It's just like the tax cut we saw in D.C. that the middle class benefited nothing from. Services are cut. Property taxes go up. So, no, that is not the case. And to tell people, if you are going to cut spending, tell us if it's nursing homes, tell us if it is assistance to schools, tell us if it's roads or bridges. But again, just telling you what feels good on that's not. I've had an honest conversation and said, yes, we have to look at revenues on transportation. We may have to look at revenues. But no, that's a budget needs to be written with the public.
Jeff Johnson.
Well, you are the greatest feel-good candidate I've ever seen, and that you're good at it. Yeah. But I think...
Go ahead. Go ahead, Jeff.
I believe politicians should actually be honest about what they're going to do rather than just try to make you feel good. And so, you know, we can't make promise after promise after promise. We're talking about billions of dollars in promises here and then suggest that you're not going to send taxes, which are already some of the highest in the nation, through the roof. Let's be honest. Sometimes I'm a bit too honest in politics. I hear that sometimes because people say, you know what, Jeff, if you just said it this way or if you just said it that way, then people maybe wouldn't get upset. I want you to know where I stand. I am always going to tell you where I stand. Even if you disagree with me, I'm not going to dance around issues and make you think that I can do magic when I'm governor, because you have to pay what you promise.
Who is going to get cut, though, under a Jeff Johnson budget? Can you be honest about that and specific about
that? Absolutely. And I have talked about the human services budget many times. I would talk about transportation from the standpoint of spending hundreds of millions of dollars on trolleys and streetcars as opposed to roads and bridges. So absolutely. But I think the question is, what taxes are you going to increase to equally be honest?
First of all, the feel-good candidate piece of this, no, this is about leadership. This is about building coalitions in the past. I have made promises. I told veterans when I went to Congress we'd get a new GI Bill for them. I told them we would increase the capacity of the VA to deliver health care for them. I talked to farmers when we talked about we would get a farm bill that had a safety net in it while doing conservation. One of the things you're going to see here is it's one thing to talk about building coalitions and getting things done. It's another to look at a record of a candidate who has actually delivered on those. And For the state of Minnesota, it is going to take the capacity to create true One Minnesota to have honest discussions about this. But let's be clear. Jeff made a pledge that there would be not one area of the state budget that he would add anything to, and if I'm not mistaken, not even to inflationary costs.
I never made any such pledge. Where did you read that?
You made the pledge no new tax increases.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. So that
that's
means if it doesn't go up with inflation, yeah, it's a cut. So you're getting right off the bat...
Understand taxes very well.
No capacity to compromise, because those who believe we should be investing have already been told it can't happen.
Absolutely not. That's just simply false, and you don't understand budgeting. I understand the federal government's a big mess, but we actually have to balance our budget in Minnesota, unlike the federal government.
Well, the Republicans are in charge of the federal government.
Democrats used to be.
All right. Let me just quickly change the subject a little bit from budget and talk more about education. You mentioned the racial achievement gap, which has shown up again in this latest round of test scores that just came out yesterday. Jeff Johnson, what would you do to close that racial achievement gap in education in Minnesota?
This issue is so frustrating to me and to a lot of people, because we've had one of the worst achievement gaps between white students and students of color in the country for almost 50 years. And we have been wringing our hands about it and saying it's a horrible thing and spending a lot of money on it, and nothing is changing. And we saw yesterday that it continues. I think the math proficiency for high school students was 66% for white students in Minnesota and 28% for African-American students in Minnesota. And reading proficiency wasn't much better. Why do we put up with that? And it's clearly not just spending more money, because we've been doing that and it's not working.
What would you do?
Let's empower parents and let's empower teachers to make changes. We have examples in the Twin Cities of schools, both private and public schools, that have taken students that are in a demographic that are failing in other schools, in the public schools, and they have helped them to achieve things. So, number one, bring those teachers, bring those superintendents, bring those charter school board members into the government to say, how have you done it? And let them, number one, help us figure this out. And then, number two, give parents more control over their own kids' school. I cannot tell you how many, as a House member, when I did a lot of K-12 work, how many parents, especially single moms from Minneapolis, would come to me and say, I so badly want to give my little boy a better education, but I cannot afford to do it, and the people at the school that he goes where he goes right now will not listen to me. That has to change. We have to give her power over her own school, and we've got to give her more choices to give her kid a decent education. Enough of this.
Tim Walz on the achievement gap.
Well, I have a perspective on this, having been in a classroom for 20 years and having delivered for students. And I agree that Minnesota has to address this opportunity gap. And I want all of you to think about this. This isn't just an achievement gap of communities of colors. We are all going to own this in both a very moral and a very economic way. 70% of this state's workforce in the next 25 years is going to come from communities of color. It is in everyone's here best interest that we allow every child to have that opportunity. And I didn't just talk about this. I went out to the experts in this. I worked with an expert in this in my running mate in Peggy Flanagan in the Children's Defense Fund. I work with businesses, and we have an equity plan that is out there that tackles such thing as making sure we have equity coaches in the classroom, making sure that we have culturally competent instructors, and then having the honest conversation with everyone. Children do not come in pieces. I know when I taught school, if a child came to school hungry, they could not learn geography. If they came to school witnessing trauma in their home or in their streets, they couldn't learn geography. If they came not having health care or the ability to get a tooth fixed, they couldn't learn. So we as Minnesotans once again need to know those health and human services budgets that Jeff are going to cut are going to exacerbate the gap that are happening here rather than close it.
Jeff Johnson.
Okay, so once again, the entire answer is we just have to spend more money and that will solve the problem. It has not worked. And it's time to actually look at these little kids as people and say, let's worry about how we're going to help them. And I think you help them best by helping their parents and going into the schools and saying, who has figured this out, and let's involve them. I've actually spent time in North Minneapolis as a Hennepin County commissioner, quite a bit of it, the past 4 years, because that's where a lot of the focus of Hennepin County is. I have been meeting with teachers in some of the most difficult schools in our state. I've been meeting with principals in some of these schools, and I've been meeting with parents from these schools. And their answer, by and large, is not just give us more money. It is, let us teach the way we know will work for these kids, because right now this one-size-fits-all, top-down, government-knows-everything response is not working for these kids at all.
Let me ask one more quick question, budget-related, and then we'll move on to some other questions. This 2% tax on medical providers, it's been in effect for the most part since the early 90s. It paid for Minnesota Care, and it's paid for other things. It's currently set to expire on January 1st, 2020. Would you extend it or would you let it expire? And Tim Walls, start with you.
Yes, the provider tax is what's provided that safety net underneath into Minnesota Care. It's also allowed us to make sure that we did preventative care on people to make sure they go in and they get screening for diabetes before we end up spending hundreds of thousands treating it after the fact. And that's because using this provider tax, Minnesota had the highest number of people insured and we have the highest health outcomes in this state. So yes, I would make sure that we put it back in place, that we continue to look at this as an investment issue. That provider tax has returned about 10 to 1 to us in reduced cost on healthcare, about productivity of people being able to work from that, and we fulfill a moral responsibility that healthcare is a human right, and it makes sense for us to get people fixed on the front end than on the back end.
Jeff Johnson.
Well, until recently, elimination of the provider tax had actually been a bipartisan issue because most Minnesotans said taxing people when they bring their kid to the doctor doesn't make a heck of a lot of sense. So reviving this is a $700 million tax increase because it is now scheduled to go away. And Minnesota Care is funded right now 97% by the federal government. It used to be funded largely by the provider tax, but when we expanded Medicaid, the government started spending all that provider tax on other things. And now we're going to have to do it the way we used to, which is find it in the general fund budget rather than creating $700 million of new taxes now on people who want to bring their kid to the dentist or to the doctor or have a surgery.
I want to make a point on the budgeting. This is in place right now. We're reducing health care costs with it. We're covering people. Letting it expire will take health care from people. And back to this, I don't understand budgeting. Now, because we're not going to extend the way the status quo is right now, if we do extend it, Jeff is calling that an increase. That's where we get into this problem. It makes no sense to us. You're going to drive people away from healthcare. You're going to drive up costs for the rest of us. And this shift is going to go over in a manner that does not help either the individuals being covered nor the state's economy.
Quick response.
So that is a difference. You believe the status quo is good. I think the status quo is not working for Minnesotans, especially with respect to health care right now. We have individuals all over the state who have gone bankrupt because the individual market has been totally thrown into chaos by Obamacare, which you supported. What we need to do, rather than talking about let's just keep things as they are, let's actually bring back our high-risk pool, which I've talked to many people with pre-existing conditions who are on the high-risk pool and said, I was paying less and had better insurance. You can boo it all you want. Maybe you're not living it. But I've talked to a lot of people who have lived it. And we were taking care of people with pre-existing conditions then. We did for 40 years.
All right.
We were taking care of people then, as we will always continue to do, but we didn't blow up the individual market for people who didn't have pre-existing conditions, and we should care about them too.
Let's all here, though, decide on something we can agree on this. The old tired talking point of Obamacare. This has not been the ACO Obamacare for the last 2 years since the Republicans took over, undermined all of the safety nets that were in there, and the pieces to try and move forward. So, using a talking point and not offering a single thing to improve upon our health care. Yes, the individual market, folks trying to buy on the individual market, we didn't have a public option. That's why we should buy and allow those folks to buy into Minnesota Care, making sure that works. And then we should focus the real thing. This is Minnesota, people. We're not just going to get caught in this trap of insurance reform or whatever. The real catch here is making sure you actually know what it costs to go to the doctor or to buy pharmaceuticals with price transparency. And why are we debating this when this is the state that did the first open heart surgery? This is a state that has institutions like the Mayo Clinic and the University of Minnesota. Why are we not talking about curing cancer through Minnesota with a reduction of cost by doing it together?
Quick response, Jeff Johnson, then we'll move on.
So, Tim, you and I agree on price transparency. So that's a victory today. I couldn't agree with you more on that. But the Minnesota Care buy-in, or whatever we're going to call it, that is the first step towards single payer, which you have said you would support, which is a terrible bargain for people because we all lose our private insurance and we're all forced onto one government plan. That's what single payer is. But if the first step towards that, I don't like it. I think it'd be bad for people. If the first step for that is Minnesota Care for All, as we like to call it, listen to what the Dayton administration has to say with what Minnesota Care for All would be. Minnesota Care, the average premium for individuals in Minnesota, according to the Dayton administration, under Minnesota Care, would be $8,000 a person with very high deductibles. In the private market, something similar is about $4,600. So prices would go through the roof. The bigger problem, the only way you can make that thing balance, other than by increasing premiums so greatly, is by reimbursement rates would be cut drastically to hospitals and doctors all over the state. Talk to some doctors or hospitals of what they think about Minnesota Care for All, because you would be driving especially rural clinics and hospitals right out of business, no question
about
it.
I would encourage you to talk to them on that. And again, how many of you are on Medicare? How many use the VA?
Many hands go up.
How many want to keep it?
Lots of hands.
Okay. The reason is because you don't mind paying health care dollars to people who actually fix your health. What you don't like doing is paying to people who shuffle papers and then pay CEOs of healthcare companies $80 million a year. That's what you don't like doing. So focusing back on the care, focusing back on the delivery system, instead of giving the hobgoblins about Medicare for all of you, and the case, again, this is the moral responsibility to provide health care for people is one thing, but you could look at this from a selfish perspective. It is in our best interest to keep people as healthy as we can, as long as we can, so they're contributing into the society. For example, if you want to pay off the ballooning national debt, the surest way to pay off the national debt at about $1 trillion a year, cure Alzheimer's. That's the way Minnesota should be thinking. That's the way you start turning the cost needle.
Tim Walz and Jeff Johnson debating live at the Minnesota State Fair. Jeff Johnson, quick
one. The surest way to solve the national debt is to stop spending so much money, which I don't think you're all for. But with respect to insurance companies, with respect to insurance companies, yeah, we got a huge problem with insurance companies. There's almost no competition in the private market. We need to force competition on the insurance companies that we have right now. And there are a lot of different ways we can do that. We can allow people to pool their resources, whether they're farmers, whether they're groups of small churches. We can actually start rolling back some of the coverage mandates that we're forcing on all individuals. We can give incentives to employers to self-insure and thereby creating competition against the insurance companies that already exist. But when the answer is, well, let's eliminate all competition and put someone on one government plan, how does anyone think that is going to make things better for us? It is not. That's not America.
There is no market in healthcare. There is no market
there
in healthcare.
Isn't. That's the problem.
Go shop. Across state lines is the most debunked thing that's ever happened. All you'll do is buy cheap plans from Mississippi that don't cover mammograms. Then you get breast cancer and go on. But I want to go back to this budgeting piece. Be very clear. that you do have an option, and it's a very clear one in this, a One Minnesota that invests in our people, that balanced budgets look forward, or one that mirrors what the administration just did. They gave $1 trillion tax cut that jacked up the deficit by $1 trillion. We saw the bulk of that going to a very few people. So here's the deal. One family, the Walton family, benefited from that tax cut to several $1 billion okay. for each one. But let me make the point on this. Now, to pay for that, because there's too much spending, we're told yesterday that the nurses that care for our wounded warriors in the VA hospital can't be given a raise to keep pace with cost of living. That's the Minnesota that you will get. Spending that goes back in tax cuts to individuals while undercutting the very infrastructure that provides for the middle class that's working. That is not the recipe for Minnesota.
You would almost think health care is an important issue. Jeff Johnson, quick last word, then we'll go to the audience for a question.
So if we're at the point in debate where we get to say, this is what you'll get with one and this is what you'll get with the other, let me just slightly change what you just said, because here is the big difference. If you as individuals want to keep more of what you earn rather than have government take even more of it, and I would argue an awful lot more of it, if you actually want more control over your health care and more options in health insurance rather than one government plan that you're forced onto, and if you want a dramatic change in the culture and attitude of our state agencies from controlling and directing and telling us all how to live our lives to actually serving us, that is the real difference between the two of us. I'll take the one that I'm leading right now.
All right. Thank you. Good discussion. Now, I've asked if there were undecided voters in the audience with the question, and Sam is standing by with one. Go ahead.
We have Piper from Hugo.
Hi. I'm a clinical psychologist, and I work at the University of Minnesota. And you've been talking a lot about human services. And over the last year and a half, I've been part of helping create four new programs to treat people as early as possible when they develop a mental illness. And all of them, except the one that's the brand new one that just started about a month ago, are full. They're all full. And compared to national averages, our programs are filling up faster than in right. any other programs in the country. And so when you start talking about cuts to human services, it really makes me nervous.
Yeah, no, and that is part of the problem we have in Minnesota right now. We do not do a good job of focusing our human service spending on our most vulnerable citizens, whether they are seniors, whether they are disabled people, whether they are folks with mental illness. I look at what we're doing with respect to employees at group homes or in nursing homes. We're terrible at that. And we spend double the national average per welfare recipient. So we're not focusing. We're not actually prioritizing on the programs to help those who most need it. And that is because we have 40 to 50 years of layer upon layer upon layer of programs, and we never go back to see which ones are actually working, which ones are actually helping people that need help, or for those who can become self-sufficient, which ones are actually helping people become self-sufficient long-term. I actually want to take that money that people are paying in, and we're willing to do that in Minnesota. Minnesota is a very generous state, and I think I've talked to a few Minnesotans who say, slash my taxes because I don't care about anybody. But they say, let's at least spend the money that we pay in wisely to help people. And that's where we fail as a state. We just don't measure these programs. So let us fund programs that actually help people that need it. But let's also take a look at the fact that we spend double per recipient and figure out why. Because some of those programs aren't working.
There's another big difference you just heard there, too. I don't believe Minnesota's failing. I believe in this state, and I'm optimistic. It's not a pessimistic vision of where we go. But there was a deeper debate that happened right here, was a bit of a talk about who's worthy of receiving these services, a bit of talk about who can able to access these, and who do we get to decide who's going to have those. The fact of the matter is, we all know this, the issue of mental health is something I have spent my entire congressional career on, working on veterans' mental health issues, veterans' suicide prevention issues. And what I know is, when I see a clinical psychologist, it's like seeing Sasquatch. I want to take a picture of you, because it is so rare. We don't have enough. We make it very difficult. Now I have clinical psychologists who I had to use some student loan repayment to get into the VA system. Now, because of what the president just did in the freeze on the federal taxes, are going to see their salaries frozen at a time when we don't have the resources to put in to help them. So this simplistic argument that we're not getting this right, we are getting many things right, but we know this is a zero-sum proposition for every single person in Minnesota. And when I'm hearing an expert tell me that we invested, did we spend more money? Okay, so we spent tax dollars with you. So anybody who that is the evilest of things, tell us what we're getting for those tax dollars in your program.
We're getting four new programs, one that just started up in Duluth, and these are to treat people with first episode psychosis. So that's treating people as soon as they experience the first episode of schizophrenia to help them go back to school and go back to work and go back to their lives.
So they can go back and pay taxes rather than being hospitalized?
Yeah.
Jeff Johnson.
And that sounds like a fantastic program, probably similar to others that I have supported strongly on the Hennepin County Board. But I heard you say, Tim, that why do we get to decide why some people are more worthy than others of receiving our tax dollars? Because that's what adults do. We actually have to make choices in life. We don't get to just spread money around to every program that's ever existed in the history of the state because it just has been that way. Let's actually demand some results from government. Let's make sure the programs we're funding are helping people. And the ones that aren't, do you believe there are any programs that aren't working?
Oh, certainly, but
okay,
I did not say that.
It doesn't sound like it to me.
I believe
there are, and we better figure out which ones they are and stop them.
Your point was talking about welfare recipients.
Right.
Who might be receiving mental health treatment.
No, welfare in general.
What do you mean by welfare?
Support programs, just across the board.
Medical assistance?
Or it is across
family
the board.
Investment program?
Yeah, the human services spending. So it could be, it could be anything across the board, and we should start reviewing all of those programs rather than just funding them and saying, it makes us feel good. We've been in an era for a while of politicians spending because it makes us feel good, without demanding actual results when we take people's money to pay for it. I think we should demand results. I think we should make sure we're actually helping people with the money that we take from Minnesotans. And we haven't been doing that. We've been doing a terrible job of that in government.
Should we look at how the tax rebates went to big banks and see how they're doing it and spending or whatever?
Absolutely, we should.
Focusing on that.
I couldn't agree with you more on that.
All right, let me ask you a question, because Jeff Johnson, your supporter, President Trump, he came close to winning in Minnesota, but he didn't win. So how do you reach out to the people who didn't support him and get them to support you? You're going to have to be governor of the whole state, right?
Absolutely. And, sometimes I will have people from the media say, well, how are you going to distance yourself from President Trump? And my answer is, I've said the same thing about President Trump since day one of this campaign almost 16 months ago. I support the direction he's trying to take this country. I think he's doing a good job. I don't always agree with him. And we have very different styles about us.
Go ahead.
Let me finish.
Please.
And that's how I will continue. Because I'm honest with people. And I think most Minnesotans are adult enough to realize that I'm running for governor. I'm not the running mate of Donald Trump. And we're going to have our differences. I have a vision of where to take Minnesota. Sometimes it'll match his, and sometimes it'll be different from where he wants to take the country. But if you want to play this game, then you better start asking the question about where does Tim stand with Keith Ellison, for example.
My question is, Donald Trump came awfully close to winning in Minnesota. How do you reach out to supporters of President Trump and become a governor for all of Minnesota?
Yeah, my record in Congress has been very clear. There was a study done at the Georgetown Aluger Institute that listed the most bipartisan member of Congress. I'm always in the top 10 of those because I reach out to find real solutions, to build these coalitions, not just talk about it. I also won in a district where President Trump won by 15 points because the people of southern Minnesota trust it. This is about leadership. Now, to be clear, this is about the independence of the state of Minnesota at a time when our politics is divisive and poison. And it's one thing to say, well, I'm not quite sure and I'm a little bit this, and then try and throw another deflection piece on here. But all I'll say is, if you want to see the difference, I didn't hear a word this week after what happened with Senator McCain. I'll be attending that funeral tomorrow at the request of his family. And as governor of Minnesota, decency must rule.
Jeff Johnson.
The talking point of independence is great, but you voted with Nancy Pelosi over 90% of the time. So it's a talking point, and it's politics as usual.
What about Keith Ellison? Do you want to say anything about
him? Yeah, well, I've always said this. Anyone, and again, we can flip this right back to President Trump again if we're talking about this, that these allegations always must be taken seriously. That we're past a point in this country's history where people, and women specifically in this case, need to feel safe and respected in their workplace and in society. With that being said, do the investigation that I've asked for, find what those results are, and if the evidence is there that this has happened, then I think you ask people to step aside. If not, you allow them to go on. But I think this piece of this, and you're going to see in Minnesota, if you want to see divisive politics, if you want to see the name-calling, if you want to see American heroes disrespected without a statement from your governor, you've got a choice. But if you'd rather see independent Minnesota values risen to that office, respecting every single citizen in the way we do business, you've also got a choice in this election.
Yeah. Jeff Johnson.
So, Tim, I think you are the first person in politics to suggest that I'm divisive in a way like Donald Trump is. It's just not true, and I think anybody who watches me and has watched me, and you can giggle all you want, but take a look at my record and take a look at, laugh even harder. You can take a look at how I've actually worked in the House of Representatives and on the Hennepin County Board. I'm in a minority of one on the Hennepin County Board. I am a conservative amongst six people who aren't conservative. And I lose some 6-to-1 votes. And then once in a while, we figure out ways to cobble together coalitions of either three others or maybe everybody to do things like measuring programs so we can actually effectively spend people's money. I'm a strong believer that if you disagree on most things, but you agree on one thing, then you go figure out how to get that one thing done and you set everything else aside for a period of time. You may go fight another day about those other things. That's the only way we're going to accomplish anything in St. Paul going forward.
How do you adjust to the cognitive dissonance of telling us this week that you support President Trump, his agenda, and that's what you'll get, and then tell us this when that's the antithesis of everything you just spoke of?
Because I support President Trump and his agenda.
All right. Let's go back out to the audience. Julie is standing by with another member of the State Fair audience. Go ahead.
That's right. We have John here from Minneapolis.
We're going to change subject just a little bit. Especially since the incident in Parkland in February, there's been a lot of talk about guns. We are not immune to that in Minnesota. One of the first school shootings that of my memory was in Minnesota. Can you tell us what you plan on doing with regard specifically to school safety and also safety in stadiums, concert halls, anywhere else where we might experience guns? Specifically, talk to me about how you feel about programs such as Guardian Program or the DeVos plan to arm teachers and staff at schools.
Who wants to take that one? Jeff Johnson?
Start. So I do not believe the answer to this problem is gun control. I believe we have a cultural issue that we are afraid to talk about in this country. We have an issue. So when Tim and I were growing up, we actually had kids who'd bring their guns to school, you know, show and tell. Nobody ever, ever considered there would be a school shooting, and there weren't any. Gun control was much less prevalent, and at least where I grew up, guns were much more prevalent than they are today, and this never happened. But in the 1990s or so, something changed, and something happened to at least a few of the young men and boys in our society, and now it's becoming more and more prevalent. And I think you could probably name 6 or 8 different things that we should be looking at, such as family breakdown, such as mental health issues, such as pop culture, such as policies in some schools that say we're not going to deal with disruptive or violent kids because we're afraid of how that might affect one group over another. And I could go right on down the list, and we never talk about those things because the answer always is, let's ban bump stocks. Maybe that will prevent the next school shooting, and it won't. And so then we'll have to move on to the next thing. So let's have this really difficult discussion because we should be protecting our kids. I actually believe that we could actually broaden the safe schools levy that is in place right now in Minnesota to allow schools to do more with that. And if that means a school district thinks hardening the perimeter makes sense for them, then they ought to be able to do that. I also believe that a school district, if they choose to, should be able to allow someone with training to actually carry a weapon inside the school to protect our kids.
All right. Tim Walz.
Well, I was both a soldier and a teacher, and hardening the perimeter was something we did in the military. It's not something I want to be doing all the time and teach our kids. This type of language. So Jeff is right, and this is no secret to all of you. I'm an avid outdoorsman. I'm an accomplished shot. I can shoot. I've done it since I was growing up. I was one of those kids who put my shotgun in my locker to go pheasant hunting after football practice in the fall. That world has changed. Yes, things have changed. For one thing is, when I was in high school, there was 150 million Americans. There's now 330 million Americans. We're in closer contact with one another. There are changes to the culture that are certainly real. But the question that got asked about this is, are there reasonable things we can do? This comes back to the same issue. And again, Jeff said the same thing on climate change. Yeah, it might be happening. There's nothing we can do on it. He just said, yeah, this is happening, but let's not look at the whole spectrum. I don't disagree with you that there's a whole spectrum of issues. But to leave the gun piece out of this, as someone who's very familiar with this, is leaving out a key component. So what I have asked, and I think all of us think is reasonable, I'm a staunch defender of the Second Amendment, but let's do background checks to make sure people don't get the guns who shouldn't have them. Let's do ban bump stock. Let's do red flags legislation. But I can tell you this as a teacher, as a parent, arming teachers in the schools is not the right way to go. It is not the right way to go on many of the pieces.
Jeff Johnson.
First of all, I didn't say arming teachers in the school. I said if there is someone with training that a locally elected school board thinks would make sense to protect our kids, I think we ought to allow them and their community to make that decision rather than us. But, Tim, nobody knows if you're a staunch defender of the Second Amendment anymore, because in a year you went from an A to an F, and I know some of you love that, but you proudly hold up the F as a badge of honor with the NRA, where you proudly held up the A when you were running in a different area of the state. I think people are tired of that politics. Just tell people where you stand.
Let's be clear. This NRA is not the NRA that many of us grew up with.
Wait a second.
Their policies are not. And I have been voting for years on background checks, no fly. I authored the bump stock legislation in the Congress because there's changes and compromise that we can try and find that would allow people to be able to do those activities, own the firearms legally, do those activities that they know they want to do. And I have to be, for many of you, many of the best memories growing up with me were hunting with my father and my brothers on land that we owned and we still have there. Nobody's talking about doing that, so try and deflect and scare people. And I want to be clear, the NRA is not the final arbitrator what's best for America, so they can be clear on that.
Jeff Johnson.
I would certainly agree with that. I don't think anybody's the best arbitrator. Certainly no organization is. But you can deflect this by saying, well, the NRA is not the same as it was when I was a kid. But you went from an A to an F in 1 year based upon what you were running for. So we're not talking about the NRA from when you were a kid. We're talking about the NRA from 2016. And this is just politics as usual. Tell people where you stand. Be honest with them. Don't jump around depending upon the audience. That's the old way, and people are tired
I would suggest to all of you, the trait of an adult going along is gathering new information and inputs as they come to you and changing courses of action as the world changes around you. That's the way things work.
Jeff Johnson.
I think that...
Let me just change the subject.
Can I just add one thing? Because I think the trait of a good governor is always telling people what you actually think rather than what you think they want to hear.
All right. Well, let me ask you a question, because Tim Walz brought up climate change. And There was a story on NPR, the website, that said you didn't plan to do anything because you don't think it would have any effect. And then I saw you tweeted and took issue with that story. Yeah. What is your position?
My position is that I want to have some common sense when it comes to environmental regulations. I'm not sure I would roll back anything that's in place. Maybe there is something out there, but I think we do a pretty good job of Minnesota of protecting our natural environment, of protecting our water, of protecting our air, of protecting habitat. It's actually something that makes us unique in this country, and it's a very special thing. But if you are going to suggest that we need to completely reorder our economy and create tremendous new costs for individuals based upon a climate change policy, then you're going to have to show me that it's actually going to work. Once again, this shouldn't be about what makes us feel good. It should be about whether we're going to make life, or in this case, the environment, better for people. And there is a broad consensus that a state by itself, and in fact, even a country by itself, can do all of these things that cost people money, and it's not going to make any difference with respect to climate change. So let's make sure it actually works.
That's why we should have stayed in the Paris Climate Accord.
That's a different issue, though.
But just so I'm clear, you wouldn't tighten up the renewable energy standard or impose any new regulations like that to address climate change.
There may be some. Again, there may be some. If someone can show me that they're actually going to change anything, but you know, one side of this loves to talk about science, but they look at part of the science and ignore the part of the science that doesn't fit the narrative. And the science says that climate change is real, that humans do contribute to it, although there is quite a disparate opinion on how much we contribute to it. Yes, there is. Well, okay, I'll even give you that, but there is. If you actually read more than your science and read all science, you'll see that. But what there is a consensus on, I love the tolerance of the left. What there is a consensus on is that we can do all of these things as a state or as a country, and it won't change the climate in a positive way if we believe it's being changed in a negative way. So you can talk all you want about, well, let's do something anyway. And if it didn't cost anyone anything, I'd say, great. I mean, we do our share in our own home, and we do our share in Hennepin County. But if you're going to do things that actually cost people a lot of money and hurt people, show me that it's actually going to change something. That's all I care about.
Right. Tim Walz.
Well, again, I supervised the high school lunchroom for 20 years. I'm an eternal optimist. I don't give up this easy. We can make a difference. We have to make a difference. This is an existential threat. With that being said, the economic argument in this is totally flawed. The path to a stronger economy is for Minnesota to own the clean energy economy, to make sure we're leading in creating jobs. Solar power is now at parity. And I don't know the last time I saw a naval carrier battle group protecting southern Minnesota's wind turbines or biofuels the way they protect the oil fields off the coast of Saudi Arabia or whatever it may be. Those make no sense. So this is both an existential threat to deal with it. It's being a state that leads on this, and the president's reckless decision to pull us out of the Paris Climate Accords makes it more difficult. But this is the opportunity for states like Minnesota to lead. States are the laboratories of democracy. We will lead the clean energy economy. We'll make a difference.
Jeff Johnson, quick response, then a question from the audience.
I love leading on the clean energy economy. I don't have any problem with that at all. In fact, we use some of it in our own home. But this is not for government to say this is what you have to do and we're going to spend your money to make you do it when you can't prove to me that it actually changes the climate in a positive way. And I, Tim, I have seen your proposals for, I think, 80% renewable in by 2050. How much? Okay, but once again, it makes us all feel good. Tell me what that's going to require, and how much is that going to cost people?
Well, first of all, XL Energy and our producers are already ahead of us. They're going to reach those goals. It's
no,
not going
not.
To cost.
They're not even close. No, they're not.
As we move forward on this, the issue is, again, and I understand as consumers, you want to turn on your lights, you want the lights to come on, and you want to be able to pay your bill. Now that we have parity costs and we start investing in the infrastructure that makes that happen, we start to reduce those while keeping money closer to home, creating jobs, at the same time reducing carbon emissions. That's the clean energy economy future that benefits all of us, rather than telling us this. When the government reduces those standards, when the government forces us to use either oil or coal, you're putting your thumb on there. Allow the free market to operate, and guess who's winning? Clean energy, carbon-free future.
Very quickly.
First of all, I would love to eliminate every subsidy there is for oil or coal. I have just as big a problem with that because it's not the role of government, I don't believe. But, you know, once again, you are the best politician I know of answering a question without answering the question. That was 90 seconds of happy talk, and I have no idea what the answer is. How much will this cost individuals? Because I would guess, if what we've seen happening in a few other states, it's going to be a tremendous cost to our electricity bills, which have already shot up in the last 10 years because of this issue.
All right, let's go to the State Fair audience. Sam, one question.
Jessica from Minneapolis.
So we've talked a lot about women being protected in the workplace, but most recently we discovered that a lot of rape convictions and sexual assault convictions are going without any... They're not being charged. Ultimately, I want to know, as governor, either one of you, what can we do to protect women in the state of Minnesota, and what can we do to make sure that more rape and sexual assault predators are put in jail?
Tim Walz.
Well, we set the tone that there's a zero tolerance for it. There's an expectation of the governor and the governor's office to make sure that we're focusing on this issue as a top priority. It is going to take, and Jeff will say, there he goes again, that it's going to take more resources, process these rape kits, make it a priority that you're not going to put these on the back burner, that you're going to prosecute these cases to the fullest extent of the law, and make it very, very clear that those are a priority that is going to be in law enforcement, going to be in our local communities. But once again, telling these local communities in many cases to try and do this without the resources to make it happen creates a conundrum. We have to stand in this state to say not one woman, not one individual is put at risk because of this, and we will not tolerate it. We will prosecute it, and we will provide whatever's necessary in the means to make that happen possible. That's what the governor can do.
Jeff Johnson.
Well, amen, brother. I couldn't agree with you more on that. And this goes back to the issue of the money we spend, which is now, I think we're at $50 billion in a biennium. Let's make sure we are focusing first on the most vulnerable people in our society. And that is a great example of this. That, you know, this is actually my professional background, at least the harassment piece of it. I'm a former labor lawyer, but for the last 20 years I've been self-employed, and I do workplace investigations of allegations of sexual harassment and discrimination. I do training on this issue for managers and employees and occasionally mediate a lawsuit on it. And we had some problems out there. It's better than it was in the 1960s. But it is far from where we should be right now, and I actually think the fact that women are starting to speak up about this rather than just privately but publicly is a positive thing for the state of Minnesota. So I doubt if we're far apart on this one.
We are just about out of time. We didn't have opening statements. I'd give you a little time at the end. So Jeff Johnson, 30 seconds. Why should you be the next governor?
Well, you have. First of all, thank you, Mike, and to NPR and to all of you for coming out. Even if we disagree on some things, I appreciate you being active in this, and I appreciate Tim as an opponent. I think we will always keep it clean and positive, but we're going to disagree on things. If you are looking for a governor who's going to allow you to keep more of what you earn, who's going to demand that government be accountable with your tax dollars, who is going to put an end to debacles like MnLARS and MnSure and child care fraud, and I could go right on down the list, and who is going to empower you to make decisions about your own lives and your own family and your own health care, then I am the candidate, and I would greatly appreciate your support. Thank
all right.
you all so
if
much.
Tim Walz, 30 seconds.
If you believe in one Minnesota, a place where we're stronger together, if you believe in a place where we can educate all of our children, where we can get health care and make sure everyone has the opportunity to live the fullest life, if you believe that we can provide things together to make our community safer for everyone and a quality of life second to none, this is the ticket for you. Peggy and I are committed to making sure the state is unified around our common visions of a one Minnesota that our future is much brighter than we've ever seen.
That's our program from the State Fair. Thanks to the candidates, Tim Walz, Jeff Johnson. Thanks to our audience. Thanks to our listeners, our great crew. Have a great weekend. We'll see you later.